Hello everyone, good evening, welcome to the NRF1 podcast, our review of the Italian Grand Prix 2016, episode 129 of the pod. We are rattling through these at a rate of several a year, pretty much as many as races. Anyway, moving on, my name's Michael Bailey. I'm here with Perry Hamilton, Kyle Cumbers and Richard Baxter to talk about all the action in Monza. And we are, of course, here with you on Audio Boom, on Acast, on iTunes, and on Future Radio in the fine city of Norwich. We do hope this finds you well. A great Grand Prix to go through with plenty of great talking points, but I have to say, we're going to skip that a little bit and go straight to the news first, because the stuff that kind of came out away from the race action was in some ways a little bit more important to discuss initially than what actually happened around the circuit. So, Kyle, Ped, Rich, who would like to go first? We want some quick reactions, please, to these big bits of news. Jenson Button.
Well, it would be lovely to be able to like do a one-word blast of a reaction, but the truth is, I don't think anyone's surprised, but I think everyone's sad to see Jenson go, because there's very, very few British Formula One fans that don't like Jenson Button. Lewis Hamilton's a bit divisive, you know, he's a bit polarizing. People don't always agree on whether they like Lewis or not, because of the way he conducts himself off of the track. But Jenson is a true gent through and through, isn't he? I mean, and you know, and we've been there through his hardships when he was still trying to go. We've been there when he didn't have a drive, or he almost didn't have a drive. We've been there when he was a world champion. We've been there when he lost his father. We've been there through his engagement, his marriage, and his separation. I mean, Jenson, I mean, I saw a video of Jenson, I think you can find on the Facebook page, on the NRF1 Facebook page. And he said about, you know, I've lived my entire adult life in motor racing. I've lived 17 years in motor racing. And I mean, that's some huge adjustment to go through in a public spotlight. I mean, even, you know, regardless of racing, some huge things he's had to go through in the public spotlight. So I think Jenson deserves his little bit of privacy now, and I think he deserves a bit of time away. But I do think he'll be missed as a character more than anything else.
Time away or done?
Depends what happens in February with the new car, I think. Because if Alonso turns up in, actually, it'd probably be Barcelona or wherever, and the car is a second off Mercedes, say, he's not going to race next year for McLaren. He's going to walk away. He can't do another year of sitting in the mid-grid. So I think the whole deal seems a bit of an insurance policy from McLaren.
Even though McLaren definitely said it's definitely not an insurance, but they did sell it as an innovative three-driver strategy, which only McLaren would call this. Just to clarify, of course, it's basically Jenson not racing in 2017, but still being on the books for 2018, alongside Stoffel Vandoorne and Fernando.
Yeah, I mean, also for 2019, I can kind of see Button having fun next year, doing maybe a bit of TV, and even sort of talk of rallycross, and I can see him moving on and enjoying his life. I can't see him coming back unless it's the start of next year and Alonso says, no thanks, I'm off. Yeah, the whole talk about this new three-year, three-driver nonsense is just, yeah, it's rubbish.
Nonsense. Yeah. Still only two seats.
It's odd though, isn't it? Because you look at, I mean, we've talked about this at length on the pod in the past, about teams paying driver, or no, drivers paying teams. So drivers bring in sponsorship and bring in money, and if they're not bringing in the money, then the teams aren't paying them necessarily to go out and do it. But then you've got McLaren, who are effectively going to be paying a world championship caliber racing driver not to race. I mean, if you want to bring him back as an ambassador for the brand, I've been harping on about that for years, that Jenson would be an ambassador for the brand, especially with the Honda connection. But you know, if you leave that carrot dangling, people are always going to bite on it.
Well, he's the last McLaren driver to win a race, the last Honda driver, last driver to win a race for Honda as well. And he is, this 2017 year is basically, he's going to be an ambassador. That is sort of the job title, isn't it? So that will involve some remuneration, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, he's very good for sponsors, isn't he? I mean, he's around here, he's Santander Banks, he's on the front of that.
In Norwich.
And Honda love him. So it's very good for that. Maybe he'll do some work sort of Honda related, I don't know. Just also for him, I suppose it's a way of keeping me in the grid, in the paddock, and he can maybe do TV through that way. It's just a bizarre deal, really, because they had to promote Stoffel Vandoorne because he appears to be that good, and it makes complete sense. Also for Button, was there any motivation going to Williams to be in the mid-pack again? It'll be interesting to see.
Again, isn't it, Williams? You just have to start from the ground up, learn the garage, learn the car, learn the facility, learn the people. I mean, he's very comfortable at McLaren, and he has been for years. You know, it's a British institute at a British institute. So,
okay, one word answer. Will we see Jenson Button race another Formula One Grand Prix after this season?
No.
Possibly.
What do you make of it, Rich?
I wonder if he's going to do like a Prost-esque style, I'll have a year out and then come back when everything's going well and win a world championship.
Ron's convinced, don't forget. Although, wasn't Ron... Oh, no, he just said that the next team to win that isn't Mercedes would be McLaren. That's what he said, wasn't it? So that could be longer than 2017. Maybe.
Or did he mean race?
No, championship. I'm sure it's, championship. Yeah.
But, I mean... There's been more encouraging signs recently. Maybe if you write out or write off Monza and Belgium, as far those two races obviously aren't suited for their car. But there's been more encouraging signs as well moving from there. So I mean, if they can get that, you know, bit more of a push next season in 2018, they could be front runners again, which would be great to see. I wonder though, is, you know, will Button still be interested by then? Is he thinking, oh, because he said he's got other things in his life he'd like to do, and I wonder, because his dad was obviously in rallycross. I think, is he thinking of getting interested in that? But what was quite interesting as well, because the announcement was Saturday afternoon, and on the Saturday morning between practice three and qualifying, Channel 4 had like a Murray Meets programme. And I thought, I wonder if he's had a word with all the broadcasters and said, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to announce it then. So they thought, all right, let's get ahead. Let's put something special out for him. Because it seemed suddenly out of the blue when it was made, so...
I would imagine people had a handle on it probably before it became public knowledge, as most of these things tend to play out. All right, we'll see what happens with Jenson. It's a long time away, isn't it? 18 months. Who knows what situation we'll be in. Felipe Massa, he's actually calling it a day properly. He used the R word. He's signed off in style. He didn't have too bad a weekend of it in Italy either. Are we going to miss Felipe? What would we be? Or how would we, Rich, look back on Felipe's career?
Unlucky, I would say, because he was at the top of his game. He was really driving well. I mean, you look at 2008 where he just missed out by just a few seconds, really, with Hamilton pinching it last minute, but. It was tight. He was a good driver, and he's always been one who has been up the front until he had his accident at Hungary, I think 2009. And to be honest, since then, he's never quite been the same. More recently, I hate to say, but he's getting a bit more whingy about kind of overtakes and things like that, because he's been involved in a few crashes. But I think it's about the right time for him to step away, and he's had a good career, and I think he would be one of the people who's most deserving of winning a world championship, because he's such a nice guy and he's come so close, but obviously he's not done it.
So close. He had some good spats as well, didn't he, with Lewis afterwards too.
Yeah, I mean, that was brilliant. And that's one of the things, I think one of the things about Felipe that was a shame is that he was almost always that number two driver. And it's almost like he was the next Rubens Barrichello. Do you know what I mean? Like, Rubens was a great driver, really solid, really quick, could win races, but always had someone ahead of him that he had to support and back up. And Felipe, it was Raikkonen, and then Alonso, and then, now not so much Williams. He hasn't got the opportunity to do it because the car's just not that competitive. And it's a shame, but he is, he's one of the... Would he ever be regarded as an all-time great driver? Probably not. Was he a good driver? Yeah. Did he have a solid career? Yeah. And he did. He could battle. I mean, he was a racing driver. That's one of the things we liked about him, is he could fight with people, go back and forth, racing line and, wheel-to-wheel battles and everything like that. He had that. So it will be a shame to not see him on the grid next year, because he is, he does have that. You get the feeling that he could fulfill that mentor role very well, but I'm sure it is a toll, and he has got a family, and he spends 90% of the year away from home probably, so I can understand it for him. So it's a decision that makes sense, but obviously, again, is a shame.
I think unlucky is probably the best way to describe him, because we'll always remember him for the finale in 2008,
last corner, was it penultimate corner?
Last corner he was champion for 10 seconds or whatever it was. And
well, he wasn't, was he, Len? Felipe will probably consider that as a championship.
But that will be, we'll look back in 10, 20 years, and that will be the clip that comes up when we talk about Massa. So he was very good, but he just maybe wasn't quite good enough.
That's how you don't want to be remembered in like pub trivia. Do you know what I mean? Like that's the person. He'll be the answer to the question: who did Lewis Hamilton beat? You know, by however many seconds to win his first world championship. Well,
he has to be the man who came closest to winning a drivers' championship without ever winning one, I presume.
It must be. Yeah.
Wow, well, there we go. We've got a few races to enjoy Felipe first before he disappears off to whatever he's going to do next. Don't know what that. Anyone know what that is? Has he said no? Nope. We'll see what it is. But the big news, even compared to those two, Liberty Media, Eddie Jordan's at it again. Breaking Formula One news. We just have to wait and see if it's true, which could be confirmed by the time this podcast goes out. Who knows?
1 hour ago, they were apparently on the brink of a new ownership deal.
There we go. So 1 hour ago to when we record this, etc. Eddie Jordan had said by Tuesday he expected it to be sorted out. Liberty Media buying a significant shareholding in Formula One, which I guess effectively meant a significant change in ownership, could play a part in Bernie Eccleston's future, although he probably still feels he'll still be a part of it. How that would work, I wouldn't know. But
Bernie says he's in charge of his own future.
I'm sure he is. Yeah, isn't he always?
He says he gets to write his own ticket. That's what he's saying.
Yeah, you can get people to do that for you. So what do we make of this? Are we excited? End of an era. Obviously, Bernie's done so much work, but are we excited by what this offers Formula One, or is this a serious issue going forward in terms of the stability of the sport? Just a small question for you there.
I think it's good because probably change is good. CVC do take a hell of a lot of money out of Formula One, so it'd be nice if some of that went back to teams and tracks and to help the show. I think it'd be good to have some fresh ideas. Maybe Bernie does a very good job, but maybe there's time for some fresh ideas and adapting to the new world.
Which they have started doing, actually. Yes. It's been kind of a watershed season, this has been, really, hasn't it? Certainly in terms of social media and the graphics and everything on the races, I think.
Yeah, very good, actually, using Twitter and Facebook, finally.
Acknowledging they exist, yeah.
That took a bit of time. The Joe Sayward blog I read today, that is it Donald McKenzie, who's one of the top guys at CVC, interrupted him. Joe Sayward was having a conversation with Ron Dennis. This Donald McKenzie interrupted, said, "Oh, this will be my last race." So that's pretty, yeah, sounds like movement.
Sounds like, well, Bernie can call it all he wants, it sounds like movement to me.
I suppose the question then is, if they take so much money out of Formula One, and we know Formula One, I mean, we talk about, is it losing traction, is it losing momentum, is it losing fans? Michael, you've quite rightly said, last couple of seasons we've had a good rejuvenation of Formula One, mainly due to the solid battle at the front between Nico and Lewis, and that's at least something that you can watch.
And this podcast, I'd say, probably as well.
Well, we are changing Formula One for the better, as we have been for many, many years, but the question is, if it's such a cash cow, why is a company seeming to be happy to get rid of it? I mean, you know, you're saying about, he say it comes up and actively says this will be my last race before we even know that a deal has 100% gone through. I mean, that seems a little bit premature. You know, we're not talking a hostile takeover here. Obviously it's the right thing, but for us as fans, it's absolutely great, because as with any new ownership, when they come into, I mean, think about when new owners take over football clubs. I mean, this is now where Michael looks at me and realises I'm already out of my depth talking about anything to do with the Premier League. But when you look at new owners, they come in a football club, it always, that next season always has such high expectation and a real buzz and energy about it. You know, are they going to inject more cash? Are they going to allow us to do this? Are they going to loosen up on this? Is it flashier? Is it bigger? Is it fancier? That's what we'll get if Formula One gets new ownership, at least for maybe one or two seasons. And then they'll really have their work cut out for them in maintaining that fan base.
Great use of the analogy, Ped. Well done. I've been proud of that myself.
I was just going to say, let's just hope they don't do a Norwich and the main chairman for the sport then goes on a BBC dancing television programme.
In Lycra. Good old Ed. No Norwich City talk on here, Rich. But, I mean, the interesting thing for me, this could open the door for more equality in terms of the payments between the teams and things like that, which, of course, teams like Ferrari would hate and all this sort of stuff. I mean, it's going to be very interesting, a bit of negotiating to be done from here.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see if they change any rules or anything. Obviously with Halo they were going to bring it in, now they're not. Are they suddenly going to have a turnaround if they get new ownership who says, actually, we're going to close cockpit altogether? What's going to happen if you've got people thinking new, different ideas? But I mean, you also mentioned about this podcast changing Formula One for the better. I've got another idea, but it's to do with the broadcast itself
of the rating.
Yeah, so at the beginning we always have the start, you have lap one, they go into the second lap, and then you have about 17 replays of the start that you've just watched, and in the meantime you're missing quite a lot of action on track. Why don't they just do a picture-in-picture scenario, like we've seen, for example, on BT Sport with the football, when they say, oh, here's a replay, but in the corner you can see what's going on. Just do that so you can actually see what's going on in the race.
I'd like to point out that World Wrestling Entertainment, formerly World Wrestling Federation, have been doing that on their broadcasts for about 20 years.
You'd have thought they'd just make a gap in the script for that, though, wouldn't they?
No, I get what you're saying, but in terms of the broadcasting, all they need to do is just put up two separate windows on the screen. It's so easy to do, and it makes me wonder why people haven't done it.
Well, Rich, now that we've said it, they'll do it, probably.
I'll get on the Twitter tonight and tweet them and say, sort it out.
We'll give it a retweet, all that sort of stuff. At the NRF1 on both Twitter and Facebook. Just put that in. You'll find our Twitter and Facebook pages and lots of fun stuff on there. Of course, if you like what you're listening to and you think, you know what, these guys are doing such a great job changing Formula One for the better, coming up with ideas like Rich and a whole host of other ones, like Joker points sort of systems and stuff like that. I'm going to have to put them all together in a separate pod. Then join our crusade by visiting patreon.com/NRF1. That's Patreon, patreon.com/NRF1. We've got loads of ideas coming up. We've had a bit of an interesting summer trying to get a few things sorted out, but hopefully now, as the rest of the season trickles on by and we get into next year, we're not having a break like Jensen, we'll start drumming up some of these great ideas we've got and keep you entertained alongside your regular Formula One enjoyment. Now, there was a race. We should probably talk about that because this is our Italian review podcast, Italian Grand Prix review. We've got to start at the start, haven't we? Lewis Hamilton mucked up the start. He lost the race, having been on pole. Nico Rosberg disappeared off in the distance, as happens with Mercedes in the current hybrid era. And there's a subtler line here. Will poor starts cost Lewis Hamilton the championship? He's definitely had a loss of momentum since the break.
I mean, I thought he came out of Spa, even though Rosberg won. In a way, he sort of lost in a way because Hamilton got the podium. And he was so dominant Saturday. I mean, he's half a second quicker than Rosberg in, what, nine corners that surround Monza. And that was, and Rosberg said, couldn't do anything about it. And that's a huge statement just on Saturday, but he just messed up from then on. But I mean, Rosberg had a bad start in Germany, didn't he? So it seems a Mercedes thing. I think it could swap around each race.
It felt like you were going to use the C word then. Not that one. Complacency.
Oh. No, I don't think Lewis is complacent. I think Lewis is very steady. I think he knows it's Formula One, crikey, it goes from March to November. This is the longest season we've ever had, 21 races, something like that. It's a war of attrition, and Lewis knows that. He's been in the position before where he's had to come from behind to win a race, to win a championship, sorry. And Lewis knows it's a long game. It's not as long as it used to be because we're now over halfway through the season, but there's a lot of racing left to do, and I think Lewis knows that. So will he have a couple of bad starts? Yeah, here and there. Who won't? But he will. I'm fairly certain Lewis will do what he needs to do quietly in his own way to recover his form when it comes to getting off the line.
He did say, well, it came over the radio that he told his team, don't worry about the start, it was my fault. Now we've got stories about him saying that there are random variations in the Mercedes start that they need to sort out. So does he think it was really his fault, or is it not? I'm a bit confused.
It is a daft thing. That's how many settings you've got just to get the car off the line. It's incredible. It's crazy. Everyone's going to get it wrong once in a while. And
I think quite a lot, though, hasn't it, for Lewis this season?
Well, I mean, Rosberg also has had a few difficulties at the start. But, I mean, judging for the second half of the season, Spa was really a write-off for him because he was at the back anyway, so we've only really had one race to judge him. So maybe he kind of was used to starting at the back after Spa, I don't know. So just thought, oh, I don't need to get away so quick, I'll take my time, and then it's like, oh no, wait a second, I'm at the front now.
Maybe, I love that.
So yeah, you know.
I think that's definitely what happened. I mean, some lovely overtakes from Lewis on Daniel Ricciardo and Felipe Massa, but I guess his tyres couldn't really sustain, and the car maybe couldn't sustain his progress.
Yeah, I mean, you had the first part of the race where Hamilton's engineer was sort of saying, oh, don't worry, it's a two-stop, you can sit off Bottas, which was not nice to hear, but thankfully Hamilton didn't listen to that. But it was I think he kind of said he couldn't push for that long, and when he overtook the Williams, he slowed down a bit, obviously, to cool down the tyres. So obviously, just a, we're doing a one stop, they always had to look after the tyres, but that was the quickest way. And they kind of, I think everybody knew that as soon as he dropped to sixth, he was going to finish second, because they were that much quicker than everybody else that weekend.
Okay, well, Nico won at a canter. He apparently said he's not thinking about the drivers' championship at the moment. Should he be?
Well, yeah, obviously. He can say what he wants, but the whole purpose of his entire crew and everyone around him is to win him a world championship. And he is, or was, in prime position to do that. And it's slipping away from him. Now, yeah, we've all seen coaches who are looking to win big games, and they will always say, you just focus on your next game. And that's all they'll say to Nico is, focus on your next race, focus on your next race. Just do that. Just focus on the next race. Focus on your pole position lap. Focus on this, focus on that. They won't, the people will be saying all of the right things, but he's a racing driver and he wants to be a Formula One world champion. There is no doubt he is thinking about the world championship.
In Belgium, he wondered where Hamilton finished. That was all due to the points, wasn't it? He won the race. So he's like, oh, Hamilton finished third. That's a shame. So that's a shame. Because it was the amount of points Hamilton got, which is a driver's championship. So of course he's thinking about it.
Yeah, of course he is. Of course he is. Right. If you want to catch the podcast, first, you need to head over to audioboom.com to catch the pod. And of course, if you want to subscribe, you can do that at audioboom. But also iTunes, and the best place for that is the address nrf1.uk/isonitunes. You are listening to the NRF1 podcast here on Future Radio, amongst other things. It's time for the NRF1 Pit Stops. Right, gents, let's rattle through these, shall we? Ferrari, they upgraded their engine. It seemed to work. Vettel was on the podium. Raikkonen was fourth. And they seemed to do a pretty good job of it. Yes? Concur?
Yeah, great showing. Best they could hope for in Italy. Really, really good work. Really nice, nice moment for them. Nice and resurgent. Are they a threat long term? No.
Tifosi seemed happy too.
Yeah, which it's a bit strange, really. It's sort of celebrating a third.
I'm such a downer on them, Kyle.
Well, there were plenty of people who celebrated thirds, mate. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
I mean, they were the best of the rest, but they still were 21 seconds behind a Rosberg who was cruising for the race. Marchioni came out and said, oh, it's all about next year now. And it's going round and round every year. It's all next year this, next year that. Well, don't sack the best designer apart from Adrian Newey and give him some time. But yeah, I don't think it's great.
Yeah, I loved the podium with Ferrari being third, of course, because Rosberg and Hamilton got a little bit booed when they were there. I think Rosberg a little bit more so. And then right at the end, he took the microphone and then he started speaking in Italian and everyone was cheering. So it's just like, I love it.
So fickle. They're so fickle. A great moment when Vettel, I think he came out of the pits and then Raikkonen was on the track after their first pit stop. And I just thought, well, I just imagine if they just both cleared each other off the track. Wouldn't that be epic? Monza would love that. Anyway, let's move on to the second Ferrari team. Oh, sorry, Haas. Sorry, Kyle. They upgraded their engines as well at the same weekend, pretty much. Was that like coincidental or just...
Well, it's just the new engine was available, so they took it, I assume. And also, they had the best rear wing I've seen for a long way.
Why was it so good?
Sort of wavy and Monza spec rear wing.
Wavy rear wing. I can't say that.
You can't have a few Peronis or limoncellos and then say that, can you?
Anyway, woof. I just thought it was interesting that Ferrari upgraded their engine and maybe they've got to have a set gap between the two engines.
I'm pressing the imaginary alert button because last week I think I was actually driving home from the podcast we did. It might have been the previous one, I can't remember.
In your Mustang?
No, not at that time, unfortunately. But I was driving home, and in front of me there was a Mercedes van, all blacked out, and it had Haas written on the back of it. So that's another Norfolk F1 link.
Yeah, no, is there not a Haas automotive building in Norwich now?
Yes. Just off Chapperfield roundabout. If anyone is in the area and you want to go and have a look at it, feel free.
So what is this?
It's just a machinery. Just
Formula One machinery?
No, just basic machinery.
Well, let's call it Formula One machinery,
well,
shall we?
Rear, yeah. Wings.
Rear wings? Wavy
rear wings?
No, just general machinery for people that need to machine stuff.
Let's call it Formula One.
Get your phone out, message your uncle and say, what's going on in Norwich?
Just the team. It's kind of like sponsorship for his machinery.
Cool.
Kyle's smile tells me something different. Kyle's face here when he's saying this is kind of a bit like, this is all I can tell you, I can't tell you anything more.
They sponsor this company's machinery?
No, Gene Haas's, where he made all his money, was from machinery, and that's his Formula One team is sort of sponsorship and promoting the brand and the machinery.
Why did the van have blacked out windows? Were they hiding something? Like a new rear wing?
That's just the cool thing to do these days.
An engine.
Yeah. And a rear wing.
That's just the
wavy rear wings. Try saying it at home. You'd do a better job than us. Gutierrez got a mention as well. Esteban Gutierrez. I think team principal of Haas, Gunther Steiner, suggested that the pressure may have got to him because he mugged up his start.
He nearly said he mugged up his start, sorry.
Don't laugh at that bit. I've got to edit that bit out. Up his start.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I mean, his qualifying was really good, actually, and his pace kind of looked pretty decent. But then, for some reason, he just went backwards. But it was quite a crazy moment because I think it was Alonso who had to suddenly swing from behind him, and he kind of went into the pit exit on the straight. And then the Williams suddenly came across a slow-moving Haas, so I had to avoid as well. So he then had Alonso, I think, and that might have been Bottas or Massa, I'm not sure which one, but they both suddenly went really wide and just sat there, what's going on there? And he just, yeah, I mean, it could have been quite nasty if there was any contact, but, you know, almost superhuman reflexes. And
yeah, it just didn't sound very, like, good signs for Gutierrez, given next year's ahead, obviously.
Yeah, and I think Grosjean's just signed a deal for next year, so obviously they're looking for a second drive, and it's probably not the best time to do that.
Tick, tick. Right, Williams, signs of life, P6, P9, Valtteri Bottas had a pretty good race of it.
Yeah, he did all right, didn't he? Yeah.
It's a bit like that, isn't it, with Valtteri? It is.
Yeah,
he's good. If anything, they want to... I think that now that Felipe is retiring, what they need to do is bring in a solid backup and really push Bottas as the face of that team, as the number one. Have a clear number one driver and really push him, and just let him settle into, this is my team, this is what I do. He's very, and I know this is you're going to say, well, it's because they're the same nationality, but he is very much like Kimi. He's just very calm, very cool, doesn't say a lot, but he doesn't lose his rag as easily as Kimi does. He's just, we had great hopes for Bottas when he first started. I remember when he first came in, I remember DT especially was really, really keen on him. And he's been good, but he hasn't been maybe what we expected. And he's kind of like another Nico Hülkenberg. You kind of just expect him to be like, when Hülkenberg first came in, we were like, oh, go on, Hülkenberg, yeah, spot on. And he was doing some really good driving. But now with Bottas, you're kind of just like, are you ever going to realise that potential? I mean, this is a guy we were talking about as a potential Ferrari move. And where's that gone? He hasn't played himself into that chair.
I agree. I just don't think he's quite got it in him, possibly. Well, you'll call it potential, but if you don't fulfil it, then... what is it? It's nothing, is it? Is it imagination?
It's potential if you don't fulfil it. It's only when you fulfil it that it becomes kinetic. Did you do physics?
Yeah, no, I didn't.
I was going to say, you mentioned, you know, bringing in the second driver. I mean, Carlos Sainz, he's not going to get a chance at Red Bull in the near future. Would he try and go sideways? Well, not quite sideways, because it's kind of a step forward to Williams, I suppose, from Toro Rosso.
I will tell you this right now. If Williams sign Carlos Sainz will eclipse Bottas within the first six races of next season.
That's my point, you see. It's not potential, it's just imaginary.
Yeah. Fair enough. No, but, I mean, Sainz is quick, and we know Sainz is quick. We've seen it. He's good. I mean, yes, he fell into the shadow of Max Verstappen, but that's a pretty big freaking shadow. Kvyat is his second. Christ, what's he done? You know, pretty much nothing. But anyway, I like Sainz, and I do think that given a decent car and given a good push, he could be a real legit, you know, if parity returns to the world of Formula One under new ownership or new rules or however you want to look at it, look at Sainz as a legit driver.
Going to be a good battle, isn't it, between Force India and Williams for the rest of the season? That sort of seems to be teeing up quite nicely. Williams are back in fourth now. There's no real surprises, I don't think, in the Constructors' Championship as you look down it, but... yeah, that seems like quite an interesting one to me.
Yeah, sort of Monza was Williams' perfect track. It'd be interesting to see the other tracks that are coming up. You kind of think Force India probably got a stronger driver lineup. So, yeah, it'll be interesting little battle. And there'll be huge if Force India get fourth, because I think they just keep improving. And, I mean, Williams haven't got the biggest budget, but I think for Force India's is even smaller than theirs. So, yeah, interesting.
Because you're ignoring the fact that Felipe Massa, the shackles are off now. He's just a free man making the most of every Formula One minute left in his body. Who knows what he could deliver from here? Kyle, you're turning up your nose. That's not good enough. Manor, Pascal Wellein qualified P13, which is a cracking effort. Kind of went a bit wrong from there. But there we go. And I thought we could stop in at race control because Felipe Nasr and Julian Palmer, they had a nice collision. Manisha Kaltenborn, since the racing, has told Julian Palmer through the media to stick to the facts, because they were obviously having a bit of a barney about whose fault was what and who should have got a penalty and all this sort of stuff. I couldn't really understand it. It seemed like a bit of a nondescript crash, really, for all the hassle that seems to have kicked up since.
Well, it was quite clearly Naz's fault. Palmer was on the track beside him and he just...
Stick to the facts, Kyle.
The facts are that he came across. Yes, he provided him space. So Manisha is wrong.
Wow. Just wow. The thing for me is you could see it coming a mile off, couldn't you? I mean, it almost happened in slow motion, didn't it? It was just, you were just kind of like, oh, he's going to hit. Oh, he's hit. Yeah, saw that. Yeah. It's easy for us. We've got an aerial camera on it, you know, but obviously...
I'd love it if that was what the two drivers were saying to themselves while they're...
Going to hit that. But no, I get what you're saying, Kyle. Nasr came across... And at that point, just because of the nature of the narrow nose and the tyres sticking out, just because of the construction of single-seater vehicles, the moment that you have a side pod stick into near where your front wheel is, it's all going to go pear-shaped. Because that's just the construction of the vehicles. So it was an impending doom.
Also, they do have history from their GP2 rivalry, where they were, when Julian Palmer won, Nasr was second, and they had a few collisions then, so... They're not the best of friends in the first place. So.
Are they the new Lewis Hamilton and Felipe Massa? Without the talent. No offence, guys. And Julian, we love you. You're local, but still, you know.
Why is an Ipswich fan?
Oh, I didn't think we did football talk on the air.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Well, let's cut it there. But that good knowledge, that, Kyle. We'll see if they start running each other off the road every week, which would be good to see, clearly. Right, cracking on, shouldn't we? NRF1 podcast. Here we are. It's time for our Off the Weekend. What did Italy deliver for us then, gents? Let's round this podcast off with these. Who was our Rodolfo Gonzalez driver of the weekend?
Ricardo, just for the overtake. Just that good.
Yes, which we hadn't mentioned, but it was on my list of highlights, so we've done it now, haven't we? A highlight. Daniel Ricciardo's overtake on Valtteri Bottas was epic. My only thing, and it did kind of filter into the conversation we had earlier, when people do epic overtakes like that, it does seem to be that they can do it against Valtteri because they know he gives them space. Is it though, or is it respectful?
It's a hard one.
I think he could nudge up to that line a little bit more. I think he could nudge up to being respectful without being soft, you know. But you need to, it's an odd thing, it's a chicken and egg thing, isn't it? You need to build the reputation to be able to pull that stuff off and not get a slap on the wrist from the stewards. But in order to build the reputation for doing it, you need to do it. And if you can't do it because you haven't got the reputation to do it, you see what I mean? It's a bit catch-22. So he just needs to go out there and just prove something.
Great celebration from Daniel Ricciardo as well. You can see it on the Facebook and Twitter feeds at the NRF1, giving the little two fingers in the air. Not like that. As a celebration. Brilliant.
But yeah, I mean, he celebrated well. But I was going to say with Bottas, if you remember, I think it was Mexico last year, and he gave space to Raikkonen, and Raikkonen basically wiped him out into the wall. And of course, Perez came through and got the podium at his home Grand Prix. I kind of think Bottas in that situation, he didn't really defend it much, if at all, because it was quite a late dive, so we didn't really see much coming. And to be fair to him, I suppose making sure your car's intact and you get a sixth place and get some points is better than risking trying to move across, maybe Verstappen style, and causing a horrible accident and losing a lot of points for your team. Maybe that's why we're just being that bit safer.
Well, There's a great overtake as well from Jenson Button on Fernando Alonso. That will go down in my highlights. Has anyone else got any other highlights?
Yeah, I liked Lewis coming round after the first chicane. Got into a really good position. This was sort of on the second or third lap, I think. Round curve grande, and then bang, straight into the Ascari. Took it where he needed to be, had the inside line. It was really nice. Really just smoothly done. Admittedly, he has the overpowered car. You know, it's quite easy to do, but that early in the race, you know, I thought it was really, really smoothly done by Lewis. And my only other highlight is not an on-track highlight. It's just Fernando Alonso's radio when they told him, you know, to keep pushing or keep the pace, and just Fernando just laughed, just openly openly laughed at them in his mirthsome Spanish way.
That's what I was actually just going to say for my highlight. It was he said, "I'll keep pushing because Grosjean's on 17 lap old tyres. He might fall back to us," and he just laughed, and that was just brilliant. It was just that
point though, because I was actually. Sad watching the live timings, and he was like nearly 2 seconds quicker that lap that came across, so it was a fair enough point. And also, him to then come in and put super softs on just to get the fastest lap of the race.
To be fair, McLaren can say that in Monza they had the fastest car on track just because of that.
McLaren fallen that low to just go round for just the fastest.
Yes, Kyle, where have you been the last 2 years? That's exactly where they are. Cool. All right. That does the highlights. Did we get a driver of the weekend? Are we sticking with Ricciardo? Happy with that? Or
pains me to say it, but I am going to give a little side vote here to Seb Vettel for putting a Ferrari on a podium in Italy. And it just must have given him a bit of a sense of relief as well, just to, you know, outperform his teammate and just put one on there for the Tifosi in Italy. I'll give it to Seb.
Yeah, I agree with that, because it was a nice drive from him to get on the podium, which he hasn't been there for a while, and he stopped complaining as well. So
yeah, very briefly, team then
Ferrari.
We said it was their most important weekend. They made a big improvement. They got, you know, third and fourth, best they could have done really with the Mercedes and the equation. And yeah, they did well. They pleased the fans.
I mean, looking back at it, you could say they held off all kind of development upgrades for weeks so they'd look good at Monza, because it is that important for them. But that would, you know, that surely wouldn't be right.
I think Mercedes, just for how dominant they were, probably one of the most dominant performances of the last 3 years.
And it was a canny switch to put Lewis onto a one stopper after almost psyching out. You know, so the Ferraris went in for their two.
He was almost the only one who did it in the end, yeah. Wasn't he?
And then they realised that they'd lost out, because he only had to he'd stopped once. He didn't have to stop again. They did, to put on the new compounds. I mean, I think really that was on them, because they went. Did they go soft? The Ferraris did, didn't they?
Super soft.
Yeah, super soft. Soft, didn't they? Yeah. So if they'd gone, I don't know, on a different tyre in the middle, then they may. If they'd gone medium straight off, they may have been able to say, well, we may have to stop again just because the tyres may fall off. But if it comes out that we don't, if there's a safety car or something, then maybe we don't. So I think it was canny, very, very canny of the Mercedes engineers to realise what was happening with Lewis and pop him onto a one stop. So yeah, that's a good point.
Which just leaves Pastor of the weekend. Anyone?
You've got to give it to Lewis, haven't you? Bogging down on the pole position and losing the race before they'd even hit the first corner. For me, if it is truly what he came out and said on the radio, what the team has said, that he claimed on the radio that it was his fault, then it has to go to him. You bog down from pole position and you lose the race.
I would agree with that. I'd also would say Nasser, because I personally did think he did have the bigger part of that collision. But also, I'd like to say, I don't want to sound harsh, but the woman who sung the national anthem on the grid.
Well, I've got that written down here.
Because that was... Like, the Italian national anthem is like really jolly, and everyone likes to sing along with it. And fun fact, you can name Italian foods as you sing the national anthem.
Do it now, or it's not true.
La pizza, la pasta, spaghetti, carbonara.
That'll do.
Wow, do we applaud that? I don't know. Yeah.
But other than that, I quite enjoyed it.
That's not, is it?
Well, it's still bordering on stereotypical, but you know, that's fine. Do we know any? Do you know any more Italian foods? When will you get in gnocchi? Poor Ridge. My issue was more the arrangement of the music. I didn't even. I think she. I don't. Couldn't work out if she was singing the same national anthem. It's like there's some sort of trippy hop beat kind
it
of thing.
Like someone had just put like David Guetta on the wrong speed on a turntable, didn't it? It was just a bit crap.
That's exactly. Just a very.
No offense, Italy. It was your national anthem sounded crap. It's a nice national anthem, but you did not do it justice.
They ruined it.
You couldn't see Michael Schumacher standing there doing the. What do you call it? I've forgotten the word.
Conducting.
That's the one. You couldn't see him doing that to it.
Needed to be the original.
Yeah.
Okay. Where were we now? Oh, yeah. Holly Samos. I mean, I like Holly, but she's kind of just seemed a bit away with the fairies at the weekend. But that was just me.
Who's Holly Samos?
She's doing Lee McKenzie's job for Channel 4. I don't know what Lee McKenzie's doing now. She seems to be doing lots, but she was at Rio.
Paralympics,
yeah. Is she? She's great, Lee. She does a great job. Any more goats? Pastors?
Renault, because they were really poor the weekend.
I'm pretty sure I predicted them to get a point or something.
Was their rear wing too straight? Is that the point?
Yes, exactly, yeah.
Wavy. Yeah, wavy, yeah.
Can you say it again?
Wavy.
No, I can't, see?
Here's a bit of a question, though, right? If you've got a wavy rear wing, surely there must be more metal used because you're covering a greater distance because you're bending. So surely,
carbon fiber.
Yeah. So surely that covers more air, and creates more drag.
It depends where the air is coming off the front wing.
Oh yeah.
I suppose.
But then, if it's used more carbon fiber, surely the car is weighing more. I mean, we're talking probably micrograms if they're even a measurement.
They use ballast anyway, don't they? So probably. Doesn't make a huge amount of difference.
Depends on what the greatest gain is, doesn't it? Over the greatest loss, all that sort of stuff. Anyway, we can't get into that now. We are done and over time. But thank you, Ped, Kyle, Rich, to all you for listening out there. We really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. We will, of course, be back next week to look ahead to the Singapore Grand Prix, round 15 of the 2016 Championship. We are approaching the end at a rate of knots. And, of course, there's only 2 points, isn't there? Gap. We should probably mention that before we're done. Before Lewis and Nico in the Drivers' Championship. It's all to race for. See how I changed that just in time? Just to race
should
for.
Should have some Renault F1 engine upgrades as well for Singapore. If not Singapore, then definitely Malaysia.
But if that doesn't play a part in the Drivers' Championship, I don't know what will. Right, you can join the website, visit it, have a look, do that sort of thing you do with websites. NRF1.uk. There'll be blogs, tips, all sorts of stuff going on there over the coming weeks. Richard's blog will be up. It will, and we're going to have a couple of videos that I have promised in recent weeks. I'm sure they'll be up for you to have a look at too. And as I said, Twitter and Facebook handles are both the same, at the NRF1. If you want to get in touch with us, please email us, or use all the social media, but you can email us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Say your words, get in touch, and if you want to have a rant or a rave on the podcast, you can record your audio. It's dead straightforward, nrf1.uk.
I was just going to add to that, or a sing.
Sing your own stereotypical national anthems. I don't know how the Singapore national anthem goes. I look forward to hearing it again.
I don't know that we should be promoting that, but okay.
The Singapore national anthem. What have you got against
our, singing our own stereotypical food national anthems.
We'll do a British version as well, just to be fair. About tea and Marmite and
fish and chips.
Fish and chips.
God save the roasted pork, etc.
And buttered crumpets.
And scones with jam. Do, 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 do.
I haven't got anything.
Oh, see? If this isn't the way forward, stroke backwards. No. And on this bombshell, join us if you can stomach it in a week. And we'll look ahead to Singapore. Until then, have a cracking time of it. Enjoy yourselves. And we'll see you then. Bye for now.